Backseat Producers, episode number 205, Seven Samurai. Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Daryl.
And this is David.
My microphone is hot.
Hot mic.
Hot mic. What's going on, guys? Backseat Producers. Mm-hmm. What?
Seven Samurai. We're like the three samurai.
The three that were added to the one, and then they had to go get more.
Now they do get three more, yeah.
Because if I told you to bring 10, you would have brought 15.
So many lines in this movie where I was like, ha, this is funny.
So we're talking about Seven Samurai, the second in our four-part Akira Kurosawa festival.
It's an Asian festival.
Japanese festival.
No, Asian.
It is, well, yeah, I guess it is a little more than...
Be like my father-in-law, Oriental. I'm like, I don't think you can say that anymore.
Not anymore.
No, that's fine. I'm like, I don't think it is.
No.
Pretty sure that changed.
So, next week, The Hidden Fortress.
I could take that one or leave it.
After that?
I've never seen it.
I read the synopsis and was like, oh... Now I see why everyone compares it to Star Wars.
Because it was...
Just because of the synopsis.
No, so there's this guy I work with, and he's like, man, I don't think the third Batman movie's going to be very good. And I was like, what are you basing that on? Yeah, I don't know. And I'm like, well, were you disappointed with the reboot, like, Batman Begins? No. And I'm like, did you see Dark Knight? Yeah, and I'm like, well, I assume you thought Dark Knight was a good movie because it was fantastic, and there's no opinion in that. That's just a fact. So, what do you... I'm like, shut up.
I'm a semi-professional reviewer.
No, I don't like pulling that card.
It's a terrible card to pull.
Nothing about the show is professional or even semi, unless we're talking Allison Mack, because then I've got...
Then you've got a semi. Yeah.
Or... If we're talking Big Trouble in Little China...
Then you're full on.
And we can drive a semi.
Boom.
Oh, little work played, Tony.
Well played. Well played, sir.
All right, so we're doing Hidden Fortress next week.
If you're listening to the podcast, then the week after that, you will hear us talk about Kaijin Musha. But we're recording after Hidden Fortress, we are recording... Our Skanksgiving episode.
Did Kakamusha come out in 1980?
Yes.
Okay.
80 or 81.
I saw that in IMDb today, and I was like, "Is this the movie we're going to be watching?"
Yep. It's going to be the color film of
big
our
hair. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hilarious.
I don't know if that's going to happen.
No, it's going to be hilarious. Don't worry about it. All right. So I made some notes as I watched through this movie because it was 3.5 goddamn hours long.
And 3.5 hours of reading.
That doesn't.
Which, well, it.
I watch a lot of subtitle stuff.
It only bothers me if I don't have time for it, and I was running short on time this week.
500 episodes of Naruto just to take one, maybe 15 minutes of actual content to pop. So what is that? 125 hours.
Seems like a waste of time.
I guess I don't know. That's not a fun game to start playing.
No,
because then time game.
Because then I start thinking about no. Because then I start thinking about all the sitcoms I used to watch when I was younger, and
yeah, no one wins that game.
No,
so.
So, Daryl, what'd you think? Was this movie a waste of time?
No, it's not a waste of time, but it is somewhat tedious to wade through in the first part.
Oh no!
All right, so what did you think?
Well, I thought this movie was amazing, and I don't think it was tedious at all. The parts where we'll get to it.
high level, I thought it was good. I can see where the where it influences many things that come after it, but I have to agree that there was some tedium involved.
Yeah, there are some parts where you have to kind of slog through.
It's a little more art house than action. Well, that's not a bad thing. It's just
weird because it's considered the first action film.
I know. Well, I mean, and that's just it. It's
for the time,
it probably was exciting and thrilling.
Action-y.
But like by modern standards, there's a lot of very long scenes of people just looking.
Look, it's just all character. It's all character study. In certain parts, where you just,
I don't even think it's character study.
Well,
it was just,
there's a lot
it was
of
just
interaction.
Examining. It was more examining the world that they were in, the time that they were in.
And that's what probably makes this movie a bit hard to understand initially is how much of a gulf there is between the two groups.
Yeah.
And they have to slog through that part to just show you how big a problem is for each side to trust the other.
I didn't care so much about that stuff. I dug the story, though, pretty much start. And so, like, I love watching the Asian stuff, and I'm looking at other Asian media I've consumed and seeing where a lot of these tropes came from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because this was the start of so many things. Like, that whole, the two samurai run past each other, and then they stand there, and then one of them falls over dead. That started in this movie! That was the first time that was done! And that is, like, every samurai anime and a whole bunch. Like, they did that in the goddamn
Predators
movie.
Has that same stylized motions, yeah.
Yeah,
that is awesome!
The portion of the film that is the gathering of the heroes,
mm-hmm.
that was started, arguably, this was the movie that started that. And that's been carried over for decades now.
In cinema, right.
And in cinema.
The reluctant hero as a focal point for the conflict resolution for a weaker subset of people.
Yeah.
Like that is an awesome tale that starts here and it's kind of find samurai that are hungry.
Okay, because we can't pay them, so we just have to make sure
they're
hungry. So look for the fat ones.
Look for the thin ones. The really thin ones.
Look for the ones that look like they used to be fat and not anymore.
Let's hit the acting of the three, what I would consider main people. Then we can roll into just various things we're going to talk about in the movie. So one, let's just get it out of the way.
He was awesome.
Toshiro goddamn Mifune. Can't even say his name right because
he's so excited to talk about
it. I know,
him.
I'm so excited. I made notes. I went through and made notes. Half my notes were about Mifune. So he was fantastic. And so I read the IMDb notes, and they're like, yeah, he was given an unprecedented amount of leverage to freestyle his character in this movie. Like, hadn't been done yet in cinema. And it was awesome.
It was.
And Mifune in this movie is the basis, I contend, for most modern male anime characters.
Well, at least the ones that always get excited.
Yes.
Tend to run around like crazy
people.
That are
always yelling. So many of his mannerisms directly translate to a billion other anime characters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, this is where it comes from.
Well, yeah, also, you might say he's the ringer of the group. He's the one that acts the craziest, but has actually got the deepest wisdom of them all.
I think that's a stretch.
He has a clearer worldview.
Well, that's right. He doesn't have because he comes from his character comes from peasant stock. He doesn't really he finds the samurai a bit pretentious at times, and he's always puncturing their balloon on that.
I don't know. I looked at his character as kind of like the cultural translator.
Mm-hmm.
Like
the bridge between the two worlds. Yeah,
he bridged the gap between the samurai and the peasants, and
he was
helped
a pale reflection of both, so they could examine themselves in him.
There you go.
Which I agree with.
Yeah.
That's why if you look at the flag, they make fun of him because he's the triangle,
mm-hmm.
but he's positioned between the two of them.
Between the village and them, yes.
Yeah.
Symbolism is not lost on me, gentlemen. The dude who played... All right, so I don't remember any of the samurai names. Because they're very Asian. Yeah, they all look alike to me. I don't know if that's racist. Probably is, but I don't care. I have a hard time telling them apart, so...
I am not used to those names, so...
Yeah. So I'm going to go with the Seven Samurai. Old Samurai.
Can be.
Toshiro Mifune.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got Young Samurai.
Katsuro.
Then we've got the Good Swordsman Samurai. Then we've got the Pig Samurai from Yojimbo. Then we've got the Traveling Merchant Samurai. And then there was a seventh samurai whom I do not remember.
The Old Samurai being the main one.
Yes.
Yeah.
I dug him. I thought he did a great
job.
That
guy was fantastic.
He was phenomenal.
So I was looking
at the movie relied on him being fantastic, and he made the film.
Yeah, he was awesome. And so I was looking at this guy, and it's like, if you think back to an older samurai, like, this is the exact image you conjure of, like, if you came up with a stereotypical Asian samurai, boom.
To the point that I'm watching that guy going, I know I've seen him in other movies. I know I have. He's got that look that's like, I know I've seen him somewhere else. I can't place him. I went back and looked at his IMDb page. All old Asian films. Didn't know him. I've never seen any of them. I have no clue who he is. I haven't seen that yet. Yeah, he is, but I haven't seen that yet.
Well, good, then it's going to be awesome.
But yeah, I mean, he's got that look that you just... Yeah, that's that guy.
Yeah, it was a commanding...
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's the anchor for all the other actors in this movie. They all kind of just orbit around him.
Mm-hmm. And then third person guy samurai would be Young Samurai dude.
Yeah, the one who followed him first.
Mm-hmm.
It's Katsuro.
Sure. Still gonna be Young.
He played young and eager well.
Young and eager, and a little too naive. I mean, the only one problem I had with this guy in this whole movie was in every scene, he looks like his face is about to explode because his eyes get any whiter. There was just something where he was just a little mugging.
That's complicated to pull off.
Well, that's just it. Sometimes he looks like he's looking at something in utter horror all the time. It's like, and I don't know, again, that's probably just a stylization of this movie. Just to indicate his naivety, but sometimes they do it a little too often.
Yeah.
Yep. So, I mean, I dug to single those three out as the principals is to do a disservice to the rest of the cast.
Mm-hmm. They were
all fantastic, although they were not the main roles that these three had. I didn't have a complaint with any of the acting in this movie,
The story focused on those three more than the rest. So I think that's where it's fair to focus on them in discussing the acting.
Yeah. So, except for Pedo Dad. Monzo.
That was weird.
When Monzo comes in and tells Shino to cut her hair...
I thought he was going to cut her throat.
He had Pedo face on hard. And
when
I was
he walked up behind her, what are we doing now? Well, it was like, I mean, I think I get the point that they were going for. It was like, holy crap, I have an attractive daughter who is gonna have terrible things done to her.
It's gonna be the girl who kicked over the hornet's nest in here.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I didn't understand why he was just so crazy about that until the one scene in there when it made perfect sense is why he was so defensive about his daughter.
Well, he said it while he was chasing her around. He's like, those samurai are going to come and they're going to do things
to you.
Well,
no, there was the other
thing. You need to cut your hair.
No, it doesn't become clearer until later on when they stage the attack on the barracks as to why he is so crazy about that. Because his wife had been kidnapped, and that's the woman.
That was a completely different dude. That was Wrench Key.
Yeah. Okay.
But anyway...
Now, what I would accept is if you would have said that when Mifune goes apeshit on the samurai in the... The problem over there?
Maybe. Becca said, I sound vibrate-y.
Vibrate-y?
Oh, that's...
I don't hear it.
Not me. When Mifune goes apeshit, and he's yelling at the samurai about how the samurai... rape and pillage and steal from the farmers.
Yes.
Then it becomes a lot not more clear. I mean, because you get the sense from the samurai that they're like this upstanding whatever, but I mean, the relationship between the samurai and the peasants class was almost the relationship between nobility and the peasant class. I mean, there was such
a huge gulf
above. Yeah.
Well, also, yeah, that's the one thing he brings out. He's sitting there and sarcastically saying, "Well, when they're all okay, we're mad at these guys because you know they took advantage of the fallen samurai by killing them and taking all their stuff." But you know, like, well, he comes in. Well, what do you expect? You know, you rape, you murder, they burn their village, and you
steal their food. Yeah.
Steal their food, and then you expect them to just sit there and do nothing.
Yeah,
and then you get mad at them when they do.
It's rude. Daryl, come on.
Yeah,
what I loved is like,
why talk back?
Like, 3/4 of the movie, he comes in, he has an order of these outbursts, one of the guys is like, why are you always yelling?
Yeah, it's always his volume control is stuck on ultra loud.
There were like 3 or 4 times where somebody would do something, and it was so, like...
They'd say something so blatantly obvious.
They'd say something so funny. God, where is it? Fascinating. I'm not bored at all. I swear. That was awesome. That wasn't 1950s or whatever dialogue. That is 2011 dialogue that I
there was a lot
today.
Of times. There was a lot of times where the dialogue it felt looked so colloquial and current that it was like, this has got to be anachronistic.
Yeah. So I was wondering if they
but it was
retranslated.
Like, it was awesome.
Like in a newer edition, they'd retranslated it.
That could be
to put some of that in.
Well,
but
to man, put more colloquialism, great. Or at least make it work for a modern audience.
But I don't see it because it was like stuff like son of a bitch and calling each other names and the language. It was
like typically when they do the subs and stuff, they leave in the honorifics, but there weren't any honorifics. There were no specific cultural references, which I can't imagine like Akira Kurosawa would have whitewashed out of the movie.
Well, I didn't hear any of it in the dialogue either. There were almost no honorifics that they throw in there, except when they're trying to be sarcastic.
I didn't hear any of the honorifics. Well, I mean, I wasn't... Really
now that could have been it could have been again the dialogue of that time. Maybe the honorifics were never a part of the language culture of 1584. Maybe those came along later as the language got more formalized.
I'm a shogun, so I'm pretty much an expert on Japanese culture in the late 16th century. So that's probably true. I don't know enough about that to comment intelligently. But
I don't know anything about it at all. I'll just say that right
Asia.
Now.
Asia. So I'm going to jump into my list unless you guys got somewhere else you want to go first.
No.
Nope.
One, I need an awesome straw hat. Did you see those things?
those
They're
straw
huge,
hats awesome.
And they've got like this complicated chin face strap mechanism. And I was like, man, those hats are bitching.
Oh, so they don't blow off in the
hat.
Wind.
Yeah.
Well, they don't blow off in the wind.
And they shed water.
They shed water. You don't need an umbrella with a hat like that.
No. And it's
you
nice
are an umbrella.
And shady. Like
they're
planting their rice paddies. Shaved heads, the skull caps were extremely distracting. Like, I don't understand if you're making a major budget movie picture, why you wouldn't just make the dude shave their heads. Like, it seems like basic makeup stuff.
Yeah, I don't...
Even for the 1950s, like... I don't understand why they.
Yeah, I don't know.
It seems like such a minor detail not to just do that.
Well, it could be because again the actors may have had to star in another film later on and they just didn't have time to grow their hair out again.
I guess.
Plus, they tended to crank out movies a whole lot quicker.
Right. Well, there's still a studio system similar to what Hollywood had in the 1930s and 40s too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you may be making a western one day and a comedy a week later, so.
Oh. Number three, I need an awesome straw raincoat. Like, they had a rain hat, and then they had a rain, like, straw raincoat thing. Mm-hmm. It was like this entire civilization built on straw clothing.
And comfort. Everybody seems so damn comfortable.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Just everything. I mean, there was no...
Well, most of those people aren't wearing pants.
Well, yeah.
Buffooning for the last half of the movie is not wearing goddamn pants.
No.
Lena came in, she's like, why do I see that guy's ass? And I'm like, first off, that's Buffooning, so watch your mouth. Second
you will,
off,
you will bow down to that ass.
Second off, later he's gonna kill people.
Don't want to be held up by pants.
Yeah.
Don't want to get blood on him.
Yeah. Four, speed dilation was really weird and awkward in places. Like when they run over the bridge, it was like just like they sped it up just a little bit, so it was jerky and like.
Well, there was also a couple scenes where guys got cut and they slowly keeled over in really slow
motion.
That
was cool. Like, that was dramatic. Yeah,
it's interesting because what it almost felt like was some of the time dilation you see in, like, in Braveheart or in some of the Zack Snyder films, mm-hmm. where it's they were using it to enhance the action,
right?
Oh, and like it was over two days, and it looks well, and it looks like it's like the early use of time dilation to really enhance.
So you're
the action.
Saying that the Matrix stole this?
Yes,
I'm fine with that.
Everybody steals from this movie.
Yeah, I know.
This movie, there's a lot to steal from. There really is.
Mm-hmm. So. We already talked about sword fight run-through shots first, where they run across and they cut each other and one guy falls down. That's awesome. I saw that as recently as in Predators, and that was like a 2011 movie,
mm-hmm.
which is cool that that's still being ripped off. So, in this movie in particular, old samurai and young samurai are walking around because they're the first two that get recruited, and like, there are shots, and the way that the young samurai's hair is kind of like there's one braid that he's got that's always over his shoulder. It's like when they're walking around town, they're like, Jesus Christ, it's Obi-Wan and Anakin. Like,
yeah.
This shot right here happens in episode 2 and 3. Like, pretty blatantly just stolen the iconic image. I mean, because the old samurai kind of looks like a little bit of
Qui-Gon?
Yeah, Qui-Gon.
Yeah. I have a feeling we're going to see a lot more of that.
Yeah, like in Hidden Fortress.
Especially in the Hidden Fortress.
Drunk Mifune is awesome Mifune. That whole scene with him running around and chasing the one talkie samurai,
mm-hmm.
that was...
I like the one part where he sits at the gravesite and he says, here, have some sake. He gives him a ball, he grabs the whole jug and swallows it in one gulp.
Oh, man.
Yes, just I'll have a little to take the edge off. Drown my sorrows.
We talked
literally.
We talked about Pedo Dad. Pedo Dad was weird, but understandable, given the context of Mifune's outbreaks later.
Mm-hmm.
Mifune is the Hulk. Most of the time, he is mild-mannered and loud and obnoxious, but then he gets angry and is prone to violent outbursts.
And then he goes crazy with the sword.
And that sword was humongous, too.
Yes. He's compensating for something there.
The sword was ridiculous. It was like, is that a sword or staff? I mean...
Staff sword.
Jesus.
My favorite scenes in this movie were... old samurai would be walking around and he would be, you know, oh, well, let's build a wall here and we'll take down this bridge and we're going to flood these rice paddies and blah, blah, blah. And then, like, interspersed through these is scenes of Mifune being a dick to townspeople. he's going places and yelling at people and chasing kids around. That was the best part of the movie for me.
Yeah, at first it was like, am I missing something about what's going on here? Because this seems like a really, really bizarre montage.
Yeah. It's like, I don't understand what's happening. Why is he yelling at that old guy? And then his relationship with the old guy was awesome. Like, Yohei or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's like, every time he would leave the screen, like, once a scene, he would come back on and he would be a dick to someone. He would yell about something, and then he would ask, where's the old guy?
Old man.
All three
hey,
of those
old
things
man.
Happen. And, like, they get attacked. The first thing he does, he goes, hey, where's the old guy? His relationship with the old guy was hilarious to me. I don't know why. So at some point during the movie, they meet the old woman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who's married to the old man.
Yes.
So they're like, oh, this old woman. And like, all have like this kind of weird respect for her. Later, they capture one of the three scouts, and they bring him back, and everyone wants to kill the scout, and the samurai are like, hey, yeah, we can't kill this guy. He surrendered to us. Honor won't let us do that. So then that old woman comes back with a hoe, and like she's like, I'll kill him. And then like all the samurai stop protesting, and everyone looks really uncomfortable.
Yeah, the way she sits there withholds that.
Yeah, and then she walks off, and then like
very slowly, I
hear stuff happening.
I'll kill him.
And then the samurai leave, and they don't say anything else. And that scene was awesome.
Well, that's when they quote, "Let her take have her revenge for her son's death."
Yeah,
and then you know, okay, now I understand why she mm-hmm. wants to cut him in half with a hoe.
Something I loved. The scroll as a tension device, where they put down the three lines of circles to indicate all the...
Oh, killed bandits, yeah.
All the killed bandits. That is the first countdown timer in a goddamn movie.
Yeah.
Like, you look
that
at
was
that,
awesome.
You look at that, and then he starts crossing them out, and you're like, yeah, and then someone dies, and you're like, oh, no. Yeah.
So yeah, that was really awesome too. The scene right after he crosses off all those names, he's like, "That was seven. There's 13 left." But man, that last seven were
expensive,
were heavy.
Yep,
that was a heavy price to pay.
Yep. Well, that's
it was a really nice checkpoint. It was a good point of reflection.
Right, because then we start seeing, well, gee, we're losing guys too, and it's some of our most beloved ones.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily the jerks who are getting killed. It's the good. It's
yeah,
nice guys
still alive.
Now we've come to by the time this time of the movie, we've really gotten kind of attached to all these guys, and you hate to see them, you know, buy it.
Woodcutter, that was the seventh guy.
Ah! Yes.
Seventh guy with woodcutter. There
he is.
Yeah. From the woodcutter school.
Yeah. You're from the woodchop school.
You're so... What was it he said? The guy that was watching him, and he was like... It was something like... you're so animated about it, or you're so...
Dedicated. Because he split that kindling with that...
Maybe that was it.
That battle cry.
Yeah, he was splitting all the wood with the battle cry.
Did you see me chop place. Men...
So, yeah. We already talked about Mifune no Pants the last half of the movie. Then when he dies, it's just his ass. And it's covered in mud, but the rain is washing it away, so you can clearly see Mifune's ass. And then probably my favorite iconic scene from the movie was that last shot at the end where they've got the four mounds and then all the swords stuck in them.
Yeah.
And then the three of them are occupying that those space in between the mounds. So you can see all seven where they would be, kind of like in a big W.
Yeah, that was cool.
That was a cool scene.
It was powerful, too, because it represented all of them.
Yeah.
In the end, you know.
Yeah, it was like this movie really brought together that kind of camaraderie, that mm-hmm. band of brothers feel, and like you don't really get a sense of that until people start dying. You're like, oh shit, someone just died.
Yeah.
Especially when Mifune bites it, because I was pretty pissed when that happened, but I knew it was coming, so it was gonna, yeah. That's what I got.
Well, also the final end statement that the character that the head samurai makes as they're walking off is the villagers are going on with their lives and they're once again cast adrift, and he says, you know, they survive and we keep losing, which just kind of sums up the whole story. Is, you know, they're a dying breed.
Mm-hmm.
And they will always lose, no matter, even if they win,
mm-hmm.
because they always end up sacrificing their lives for others.
Yeah. So, what I love again is that Kurosawa is playing around in this kind of post samurai era, and I love the way that he personifies the fall of the samurai. again, in this movie, like, the guns are symbolic of the new era and the new age.
Yeah.
And, like, so if you read IMDb...
And this movie was actually made before...
Yojimbo.
Yeah,
54 versus 58, right?
That sounds about right.
So if you read IMDb, IMDb tells you that no samurai is ever bested in combat. They're never killed by a sword or an arrow. All four samurai that die are shot.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So when you're watching through it, you're like, man, you're right. This is intense. Like, and what's cool about it is it sets up this super's mentality that, like, modern movies still try and capture, like, oh, this guy is such a badass. But the way that they understate the badassness of these characters is awesome. Like, the people are all experts in their own. Like, woodchop guy is the best at chopping wood.
Yeah.
And he built those fences. But, like, swordsman guy is awesome and doesn't ever, like, it's so under, like, he's so, there's so much humility with it that it's a neat juxtaposition. And, like, young samurai guy is the only one who ever comments on the samurai guys doing their thing. It's kind of like a 13th Warrior,
mm-hmm.
where, like, the whole team kind of understands each other. And even though they haven't worked together before...
Everybody has their roles.
Yeah, they all understand it. And, like, young samurai and, to a lesser extent, Mifune are commentators on this kind of cohesive unit.
Well, these guys are all experienced soldiers, too. They've all been through multiple battles, so this is no big deal to them.
When he's talking to the kid's like, so have you seen much battle? He's like, yep, mostly on the losing side.
Yeah.
So the other, you know, like young samurai and Mifune, you know, they have never really been in a fight of any major consequence,
mm-hmm.
and that's the thing that's setting them apart. I mean, well, Mifune, of course, he's a wild man. He just gets into all sorts of fights all over the place. But, you know, it's just one on one brawls. It's nothing ever organized.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid, of course, he's never even been in a bar fight, so he doesn't even know what to expect.
Yeah, like Mifune he has the same potential and skill of the other samurai. He's just extremely undisciplined,
right?
Mm-hmm. He's mostly unorthodox, which is a cool juxtaposition. Blah blah blah. Shared worlds. Blah blah blah. Pillar functions. Blah blah blah.
But that's who the audience is going to kind of identify with.
Yeah, because he's awesome. He had me. This was the basis of the Jack Burton character. Fact.
Yeah, I can see it.
Some of the other innovations in terms of the camera work that Mifune puts in here, Kurosawa puts in here too, is there's a lot of interesting little tracking shots and close-ups and of course his ever famous weather. Environmental changes coming in there. Of course, the final battle takes place in a driving rainstorm.
Yeah.
And whenever the action starts beginning, we have the driving beat of the soundtrack that changes to the marching drum.
Yeah, there was a lot of that was really awesome. Every time they went to go see somebody old, they would get like that old, like throaty chanting.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh man, shit's.
Or when they had some dramatic moment. Mm-hmm. In there, you would hear the throaty chanting, and then it would switch back to the pounding drums,
mm-hmm.
as when the tension was beginning to build. The other interesting thing is that Kurosaki himself did not totally write this whole movie. This was a collaboration with two other writers, although he ended up directing the whole thing. And just about everybody has pretty much ripped off this movie. Of course, the two most blatant ones, of course, is, you know, Magnificent Seven. And as recently has been redone again with Bruce Willis as the lead role in Last Man Standing, which was about, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah, that sounds about right. And
that was probably the more true, that was a more truer, no, excuse me, that was a Yojimbo, excuse me.
Yeah.
The latest ones would probably be Magnificent Seven, Battle Between the Planets, which is a god-awful worst adaptation.
Wow, yeah.
If you ever want to see a really poorly...
I have seen that movie.
If you want to see a poorly done Seven Samurai, Battle of the Planets, if you can stomach...
A fairly good one is Bug's Life.
Yeah.
The Pixar film.
Right.
There's also the full anime series called
Samurai 7.
Samurai 7.
I have not seen that.
I've watched it. It's all right. It's not... It's a mediocre anime. It's got some cool themes, some things, the way they change up the whatever.
But, yeah, but they spread it over 26 hours instead of 3.5.
Well, 26 hours, and they also, like, they heavily play up embellishment. Like, the dude, old samurai, is played by a dude, he's, like, killing spaceships and stuff. Like, well, like, the bandits are all these, like, huge robots that are coming, they just, like, suck up the rice. So, it's actually a pretty cool adaptation
of it.
Yeah. Because I think the guy who plays Mifune is, like, this huge robot guy, and, like, his head falls off. He shoots steam all over the place.
Yeah, we can make it... We can update it to this era. We could have, instead of a giant banks coming up and vacuuming up all the mortgages, and the seven samurai or seven Occupy Wall Street protesters.
Seven credit unions.
Seven credit unions. There you go. And they must defend the shopping mall.
Jesus.
Tony. There's one point in the movie, Tony, where old samurai meets pig samurai,
mm-hmm.
and they're talking, and he's like, hey, you're my old war buddy. Maybe this is when we'll die. And then it's a shot of old samurai, pig samurai, and young samurai, mm-hmm. which are the only three to survive.
Yeah. I was reading that trivia right here.
It's good. That's good trivia, man.
I like the one about Mifune's character's name.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a girl's name.
Two girls' names.
It's like a Betty Sue kind of name. And that his character is illiterate. And it's a very subtle thing that the other samurai choose to tease him about the age and not choosing a girl's name. That Kiku translates to chrysanthemum. And Chiyo is 1,000 generations. And that's years and a plant. Again, that Mifune's character is named after. Yojimbo, he called out the name of the field of plants and the 7-year plot, yes. Or something like that. Yeah.
Mr. 30 fields.
Yeah.
Or just Mr. 30. Or 30 something.
And therefore... He is the man with no name.
Well, the
probably should rip that off somehow.
Somebody should do a take on that.
Yeah.
Somebody
probably
awesome though.
Never done before.
Somebody awesome though.
Yeah. I watched an interview with Clint Eastwood the other day. Like Jon Stewart interviewed him. It's weird to see Clint Eastwood juxtaposed with Jon Stewart.
I can imagine.
Like Clint Eastwood is. Clint Eastwood.
Josh have you seen this?
Like this little
puppy,
weird Jew. Clint Eastwood is Clint goddamn Eastwood, and like, even though he's not being like Dirty Harry or like, he's always
Clint Eastwood. Yeah, he's just the
his
way he is.
Just there. Yeah, like he's got that gravitas. It's like Jesus.
There was a quote that he was interviewed for some magazine, and they asked him about gay marriage, and he's like. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah,
seriously, I don't care.
Yeah.
Are they happy? Good for them.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Good for them. I don't even care that they're happy.
We should. People should just do what they want and be happy.
Yeah.
That's awesome. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think the next time we do a month of directors, we should do Clint Eastwood because he's made some solid flicks.
Yeah, but then I'm going to want to talk about
Gran Torino again? That's fine. We can do it again.
Gran Torino is such a good movie. Every time it's on, I watch it.
Well,
it's not on that often.
But that's good. The good thing is that Eastwood's directed enough films that you can have a whole month of them.
Yeah, and it's most people don't...
And Eastwood knows the value of ripping off Kurosawa.
Yeah. He was there.
Yeah.
He was there for the beginning of ripping off Kurosawa.
He was Mifune. That's the best of both worlds, ripping off Kurosawa
and Mifune.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, until just the last 10 years, never thought of Clint Eastwood as a director, but he's been directing for like 30 or 40 years. It's crazy.
And
yeah.
Composing.
Yeah.
And he gets some pretty decent material, too.
Pretty decent.
Like, great material, great actors.
I recorded Hereafter just because he directed it. Like, I'm very vaguely interested in the story, but although I hear J. Edgar's getting panned,
really
being boring.
Well, geez.
How surprising.
I don't know about that, man. Clint Eastwood and
Leo, guy. Yeah.
Come on.
That's a tough sell to call it boring.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like.
True. I got nothing else.
Seriously?
On this movie. Yeah, seriously.
3.5 hours, you got nothing else? The opening, which is an obvious point for Lucas to rip off.
Lucas rips off so much of this stuff. No, I mean, it's...
This is another thing.
It's a solid flick. I think by comparison of movies today, the pacing is slow, but the movie stands up. For being an influential movie, the movie stands up, and it's
right.
Extremely watchable.
The pacing is
there's a problem that a lot of movies that are influential kind of suck by today's standards because people have done them and done them better. But this movie is...
People aren't doing this better. Well,
people are taking bits and pieces of this movie, and they might do bits and pieces of it better or adapt from it. But as a whole, they're not. I can't see many people touching anything close to this. It's a solid film.
Another thing that struck me about this movie was, and this is something I think that we've lost a lot in our society, which I'm actually pretty upset about, is so when the samurai are walking around, you can identify easily the samurai and the peasants. Samurai have swords.
Yeah.
But they look like such badasses with those swords. Like, if I could get away dressing like that now, I would. Because that's like the whole feel and like oeuvre of the samurai is like, that is a powerful element to the movie. Like, when you're looking at the group of people, they're running around, and there's a lot of goddamn running in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they show you almost the whole village, and the people run from one side of the village to the other, and everybody runs. Like, even those really old dudes are running.
Yeah.
Well, it's not so much they carry the sword or anything, it's just they walk with the command authority. Everybody just plows out of their way.
Well, I mean, the swords are a large part
well,
of it.
Well, that's
as
just
as
a symbol.
As that sword,
I know, everybody backs.
Everyone.
But the thing is, if you notice one thing, when they walk straight up, looking ahead. The peasants, they crouch and dodge and always act like, you know, someone's going to hit them. And they're always rather craven about just about everything they do. These guys, you know, they walk down the middle of the street and everybody gets out of their way.
Tony, I miss this from our society.
That's fair.
I'm pretty sure it's your fault, but I haven't worked out how yet.
That's fine. You'll get there.
Well, you know, you can implement this stuff, you know, even where you work. You could walk out there with command authority and run from one side of the building to the next.
Yeah, after I passed my test, I brought my Aaron Rodgers jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, yeah. Time to put on the champion gear.
You'd be the sequel samurai.
Hey, so, I don't know if you know this, but Packers are still undefeated this season.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Good for them.
Packers still undefeated, and I believe ESPN just came out and listed Aaron Rodgers as the single best player in football right now. By the way, I liked him before he was the best player in football. Okay, maybe at the beginning of last season was when he really started ramping up his skill and talent. Mostly because
he is the Quentin Barnes of modern football.
He is the Quentin Barnes of modern football because Don Pine is Brett Favre.
That is
yes.
Fair.
Yes,
that is a fair assessment.
Absolutely, this works.
Yes, it does.
So Favre was busy taking pictures of his wiener to send to people. And Aaron Rodgers was just slowly accumulating victories for the Packers. Melina's like, what do you want for Christmas? And I'm like, why won't you give me tickets to the Super Bowl? It's in Indianapolis. It's only 4 hours away. So I can see the Packers take another victory.
From whoever.
No. I don't know who it's going to be. There's a couple teams it could be. I can see the Patriots going. I can see the Steelers going. Ben Raplesberger is looking around. He's got stuff going on. I've seen his cold, dead eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about football.
His hungry, cold, dead eyes.
There's only two things about football that I care about. And
is
that is...
One of them the Galactic Football League?
One of them is the Galactic Football League.
Booyah!
The other one is the league.
Oh, by the way, I watched season 2. It is excellent.
So you've seen the Fear Boner?
I've seen the Fear Boner. I've seen the Sacco. I've seen everything.
Oh, the Sacco. Oh.
I've seen Taco. I've seen Rafi. Hey, let's get the same girl pregnant.
Eskimo blood brothers.
At the last episode, where Russell's rucks into the ground. Russell's like, "How do you have a boner?" Oh, don't worry about it.
Yeah, when you get to this season, you have to kind of stick with it till Rafi shows up. But yeah, it's worth it when Rafi shows up. Good show.
Yep.
Taco sings that song about his Nagata. All the black people at the party don't know what to do. So he throws this. One of the guys is a plastic surgeon, and he picks up a new partner, and his new partner is black. So he throws this like rooftop party to kind of celebrate, and like, so there's a sign at the door that says "whites only." He's like, "I was talking about the dress. It's a white only dress thing." Just take the sign down. And find, like, every black person that walks in is like, "What?" And then John LaJoy sings a song about like this sword spear thing called a Nagata, and so he just kept saying Nagata. Like, everyone's like, "What?"
Getting more and more uncomfortable. The show thrives on just making you uncomfortable throughout.
It's so good.
Why is his dick on fire?
It's so good.
Oh wait, that's season 3 one.
This is The League?
The League.
Okay.
Yeah, the premise, it's all based on a fantasy football league. This group of guys are part of a fantasy football league, but it's...
Well, my problem
that's
with
tangential.
It, my problem with it is that they start talking about actual games from last season, and like, "Oh, I've got Rodgers, but I think I'm going to play Vic instead." And I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you playing Vic over Rodgers? Then I'm too into it. And they're like, "Oh, Arian Foster, blah, blah, blah." I'm like, "Whoa, Arian Foster's like the best running back in the league right now." He was last year, too.
Okay.
I mean, people will tell you that he wasn't, but they're not right.
I'll have to take your word for it.
I played against Arian Foster last week.
Did he kick your ass?
No, I won, but it was a squeaker. It was a rough game. It was a rough game.
So the question is, would you trade Aaron Rodgers for Mifune if you could?
Woo!
Bringing it back around.
I would not trade Aaron Rodgers for Mifune. There's probably a reason there are no Asian football players.
Because their name is not Mifune.
Well, Mifune would not have a sword on the field either.
That would make it an interesting game, though.
Yeah, it would be a weird game.
Something more along the lines of the GFL.
Yeah, something more along the lines of the GFL.
Start tracking fatalities.
That's
confirmed kills.
No, Mifune would just maim.
Yeah.
He'd leave a path of people who are too broken to get back at him.
The field would be strewn with their bones.
Alright, I got nothing else. You know what's hilarious? Chippy's going to chew our ass for this episode.
Oh, I have no doubt.
So,
I look forward to it. I look forward to a rebuttal that is probably going to be...
longer than this episode?
I would say at least twice as long as the episode. We're at 48 minutes right now. I'm thinking he's going to pull an hour and a half.
I think he could probably pull together 4 people who have already said that they wanted to talk about this movie.
Yeah.
Like jump onto like a fan roundtable thing.
Do it.
What are you looking at me for?
No, I'm calling out to Chibi as he listens to this episode a couple weeks from now.
No,
go ahead.
He's already stopped listening.
Maybe. I think the rage is built to white hot anger, and he's probably just coming down from it now long enough to hear me issue the challenge for him to record his own episode.
I'm hungry again, Tony.
I don't know what to tell you.
It's not my fault you have vaginal hubris. Alright, I'm out.
Okay.
See ya.
Thanks for listening.
Next week, The Hidden Fortress. That's gonna happen.
More subtitles. The worst thing about
it's only 2 hours and 20 minutes this time.
The worst thing about subtitle movies is that I can't do anything else.
You have to actually watch them.
Yeah.
Gee, what a tragedy.
I don't think that I miss things from most movies when I do other things.
I think they're like 50 words.